Welcome to Game On with Grace, where we're not just talking cricket wins and losses, we're talking off-field antics, guilty pleasures, and the drive that never quits. Hey everyone, I'm Grace Hayden and welcome to the show. I'm super excited to be chatting to today's guest. He's someone who didn't just play cricket, he redefined it. It's Adam Gilchrist, known as one of the greatest wicketkeeper batsmen of all time. For his explosive batting and unmatched records, he was an absolute gun. Today, we're going to be talking of his highs and lows, the memorable laughs, the key pillars in his journey, and Gilly off the field. But also, the time that he almost joined Major League Baseball. Game on. Well, Gilly, welcome to Game On with Grace. I'm so excited to have you as my first guest. This is the first episode, so what a better guest to have on than you, my friend.
Gracie, thanks for the welcome. Thanks for the invite. Who would have thought?
I know.
All those years ago when your old man and I set out on a little journey that we had a bit of fun along the way, and then here we are all these years later. And, I feel privileged and honoured to be the first guest on this new venture for you. And well done on all you're achieving in recent times. You're nailing it.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot. So nice to have a full circle moment. It's such a family in cricket that we have, and I feel so lucky to, you know, be living the dream in the cricket world, but also to have such amazing long living friendships like you and so many others that Dad's, you know, introduced me to, and I've known you since I was a youngster, so it's so nice to have you on here. But we want to start with our first segment, because with Game On, we want to kick off with some fun icebreakers. Now, these are a little bit rogue and, I don't know, just go with it, because we want some icebreakers. We want to just lean into it a little early on. So first question is, what's something you're weirdly competitive about? Obviously, athletes are competitive as it is, but what's something that you've brought into normal life that now you're really competitive with?
This is such a boring answer for you. I don't think I am.
Really?
I really don't think I am. I know that a lot of people say they can't do a game at home, or they've got social. I've been playing a little bit more, got to pronounce this the right way, paddle or padel, depending on whether you're in Europe or Australia, how you pronounce it. But yeah, a bit like pickleball, which is obviously huge in the US. I've been playing a bit of that lately. So that is probably getting my aggressive nature flowing a little bit. Pretty keen to win most of those games. But other than that, I'm a fairly placid character.
Oh, well, that's nice. That's good to know. I mean, paddle is difficult, though. Like, having to hit it up against the glass board as well, like, the whole works. And it gets really full on, too.
It does. There's a nice intensity. Good workout. It's bringing in a game that was around long before you were invented, Grace. It was squash. It's dying a slow death, squash. It might be gone, but I like bringing in those elements. I think it's a game that keeps everyone involved, no matter the skill level.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's probably where I get aggressive, because people of what I think with lesser skill start beating me. That's when I get a bit annoyed and start having a crack.
You're like, righto, got to switch on here.
Yep.
All right, next question. Have you ever gone way too far with trying to win something off the cricket field? You've just said that you're not that competitive, but has there been a moment in time where you've gone, oh, probably overstepped the mark there, weren't too competitive, maybe in paddle?
Probably that. Probably the odd game, and it sounds token, but the odd game of backyard cricket where you do get your mates come over who are non-cricketing mates. Again, it's this perception that you're better than them, and they think it's their shot at the title. And obviously, a lot of cricket in our country, as you know, it stems from the grassroots, literally in your backyard, on the lawn in your backyard. So that's probably where I get a little bit aggressive and just make sure that I dig in. And that, when you see your team or your friends, that look of basically sadness on their face, that they're looking at you going, feeling sad for you. Not sad because they're getting beaten. They're sad that you're taking it so serious. So that probably has come out a few times, normally probably Christmas afternoon.
Oh, well, that's pretty natural, you would have thought.
Yeah.
But I want to get into the nitty-gritty now. Obviously, Game On, our goal is to really tap into what makes you guys tick, what makes the greats of their individual sports really fire. you were incredible at your craft and such a part of such a star-studded team, really, known as one of the greatest teams ever to be playing the game or have played the game. But I want to start from the beginning. You as a youngster, how did you realize that cricket was something that you really wanted to do and take on as a real career path? Because back then, it wasn't really, I guess, a direct career path that you would say now people go to schools where cricket is, you know, their main point of view, where, you know, you had to have degrees or jobs. What was the progression for you?
Yeah, it was based purely on passion and love for the game. And your point's a really valid one, Gracie. Back then, you didn't look at it as this is going to be what's going to give me my livelihood. This is going to lay the foundation for me to, you know, be able to buy a house for my family and provide for my family. The money and the finance just wasn't in the game. And, you know, imagine the generation before ours, it certainly wasn't there. So, but we were the beneficiary, our era of new negotiations around pay and getting a slice of the revenue pie. So I don't think we missed the boat at all. But as a youngster, it certainly wasn't the aspiration. It's just passion for the game. I just loved it. And, you know, it's funny. I reckon there was a game I fast-tracked really quickly forward to a game in the Ashes of 2005-06 in Australia, 2006-07 in Australia. We were trying to regain the Ashes after a disastrous 05 series, but I was right at rock bottom. I was getting out. The game had me by the scruff of the neck and I just didn't feel like it. I was enjoying it. Well, I didn't know that I wasn't enjoying it, but I went out there in one game. I got an edge through slips. I should have been out first ball, but next ball, I played this stroke and absolutely smoked it. It just felt perfect. It sounds a bit self-indulgent, but the reason for bringing it up is as I hit it, it reminded me of why I play the game and that feeling of pure ecstasy when you nail a shot or you take a catch or for a bowler, you know, bowling the perfect ball. It just reminded me, and I was there in the middle of a test match at the WACA, and it took that simple reminder and it took me back to the question you ask, why did I play cricket? Why did I stick at it? Just passion and love for the game. And I loved the training. I particularly love the aspect of being in a team sport and having mates around you to ride the highs and, you know, lift you up high when you're going well, but also try to lift you off the ground when you're not going well. So that's what it was born from. And then just simply watching on TV thinking those guys like AB and Rod Marsh and the like they didn't seem human. They seemed like they were superhuman. So you just wanted to try and replicate what they did and be like them.
100%. Was there a moment where you went, okay, I've made it. This is it.
Oh, God. Actually, that is a really interesting question that I don't know that I ever felt that. I felt complete elation and a release of almost this most relaxing feeling out of my body when I retired when I announced my retirement from the Australian team of, wow, like, I know I achieved a fair bit there beyond my wildest dreams. So, and I, again, don't say that in a boastful way. It's just like, oh, that's been a journey. But I don't think at any time in that journey you stop to think I've made it. And that's probably what was made our team a great team in that core group of players for probably 10 years. I don't think we ever did feel that. And that kept us incentivized to keep trying to improve, keep going up. And we got challenged. We lost a couple of series along the way. But yeah, I don't think there was an ever acknowledgement. There was a period of time in 2005 in that where I said I was struggling, where I thought I've never been good enough for this level and I've somehow been a hoax and sort of fluked it all away. I had a lot of self-doubt creep in at that point for the first time ever, but managed to get through that with the help of, you know, the people closest to you and teammates and family. So it was more an acknowledgement at the end that, well, that's better than I thought it was going to go, but didn't sort of stop and think about that on the journey.
Well, I guess you're always in fight and flight mode, right? Where you're constantly fighting for your spot, you're dealing with pressure and having those rock pillars in your life, whether that be your mates in your team or your family that are there to ground you and support you through those tough times, because there would have been plenty. Like 2005, you said, you know, was your rough spot. How did you deal with pressure? Who did you lean on people? Did you have rituals that you had in your head that you worked out that you needed to do while you're on tour? Because you're always away. That's what the great game takes you, always overseas or always away in different hotel rooms. How did you deal with pressure on the go too?
Yeah, it you're spot on. The lifestyle is fun. It's exciting. It's literally living that dream that you might have envisaged in your mind as a youngster or as you went through the teenage years. But it's challenging and demanding, and like a lot of occupations, there's a lot of sacrifice, and none the least time away from family and friends and missing milestones and so on. The pressure aspect, generally, I think I was able to not look at pressure, not feel it. The pressure really came from the only pressure of concern, or was more expectation of yourself. Are you doing the things at the level that you want to be at? It's amazing. People say, oh, did you get nervous? And I say, yeah, I was always a little bit nervous before every innings. Because I think that's good, because that shows you that it means something to you about what you're about to take on. But if I hadn't done the training that I know I had to do, and this is the old sort of man or woman in the mirror stuff, where the only person you're looking at is going to be giving you the honest answer and you can bluff everyone else. But you know, if I hadn't caught the balls, hit the balls, slept well enough, eaten well enough, trained hard enough, it's amazing how much more nervous I was when I was walking out to bat if I couldn't tick all those boxes, or if I went out to wicketkeep to Warnie and hadn't done my drills to Warnie. And that, I think I tried to keep that internal and not worry about the white noise on the outside. But it does get to it. The longer you play, the more you start to feel a little bit of that constant exposure to the public profile, and it can start to wear you down. The other thing, really quickly, that dealing with time away and the challenges, not pressures, but of being separated from and missing things. 2007, I was a little bit late to the World Cup tournament because I stayed behind for the birth of Archie, our third child. I didn't miss the tournament proper, but I missed a couple of warm-up games. I flew in to where the team camp was in St. Vincent, a beautiful island in the Caribbean.
Isn't it unreal there? I must say, those resorts. Yeah. Top notch.
How and good. That rum right hunt,
deadly. Yeah. Absolutely deadly.
Well, this is the thing. It's such a relaxed sort of whole vibe through the Caribbean, isn't it? So
I land.
I can just see you finding the right surf wave around the Caribbean, Grace, too, just absolutely nailing
guilty.
It. But well, the first time we were there was when you guys were about, I reckon, one and a half. Harry, our eldest, and you guys, and the Lehman kids. It was.
Oh, we used to run a marquee.
Yeah, that was.
Every ground was like our playground. It was the best.
And it was funny. Like, you guys, it was good to travel when you guys were really little, because it's just like carrying an extra piece of hand luggage around. But then there's a sort of middle period of time. Absolutely, once you hit school, it's hard to start being away so much. But I rocked into that 07 World Cup a few days late, and having just flown out from Mel and another newborn. So I was pretty flat, and I was starting to question, should I? But I got there, and the first night I went down and found a quiet little beach by myself. I had a beer, and I, as you do when you have a child, to celebrate your little stogie, just to acknowledge that. But I took a companion with me, and that happened to be your old man.
Of course. And
he came down.
Love the little stogie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Honestly,
so we've all celebrated all our children very well together, but with each other. But just, you know, moments like that, just sitting, talking, I ended up in tears about how emotional I was, but just leaning on those around you. And of course, the next night I went and did the same, and he came again. And the next night, to the point where eventually John Buchanan said, "Righto, Gilly, come here. Are you ready to get into this World Cup now?" I think I asked him for one more night, but anyway.
Did you get the extra night?
We had one more, and I wasn't the lone ranger. I think everyone came along. We had a nice blowout. Oh, absolutely. Always a good ally.
Always there for a good time.
Yeah. Well, we won the World Cup undefeated, so it went well.
Exactly. I think, I don't know if maybe my middle brother was born after he had to leave that World Cup celebration or something early to make it for the berth back home for Josh, but he ended up being late. So he was devastated that he'd missed. Was it Kerry Packer's yacht or something? Have I got that wrong? Of a celebration?
James Packer, yeah.
James Packer, sorry.
The day after.
His yacht the day after, it ended up in a big celebration. He was devastated he missed it because he was on the flight home.
He did the right thing, obviously, but I clearly remember. Tough place to get out of, particularly when you've just won a World Cup, but we haven't broken the news. We've just told him that the boat day was pretty relaxed, pretty quiet.
I'm sure you did.
It was one of the great days. But anyway, that's another story.
Talking about family, though, you mentioned that you miss milestones. And it is one of those things that is difficult for both parties. I mean, I've definitely been on the receiving end. But the amazing person in my life was definitely Mum. She kept us connected the whole way through. I never felt like Dad ever missed a moment for me because Mum was that key pillar in keeping us all together and as one unit. And I'm sure your beautiful wife and you have been together since you've been so young. But to have her, did she play that similar kind of role?
Yeah, very much so. And the point you make's absolutely spot on about, you said right at the start about the sense of family through the journey of our generation and era, and I see it being played out by the current guys. A lot of these, you know, Pat Cummins and those guys have played, Warner and Khawaja playing together when they're in the under 10s or 12s or whatever, that journey all the way through. And then there was a whole lot of us, you know, your mum and dad, Mel and I, Steve and Lynette Waugh, the Langers, who had been together since they were in their teenage years. And so I think that you can't comment on anyone else's journey. No two journeys are the same. But I think the fact that, you know, let's say Kel and your mum and Maddie, your dad, went through all the levels of achievement in the cricketing world. So they started at schoolboys and then, you know, grade and then second 11. And so it wasn't like, you know, that he'd made it to the highest level and then met someone at the top who didn't know all that various layers of sacrifice and commitment and fun and joy along the way. So again, there's no right or wrong to it, but we can only deal with the journey we were on. But it was just a great bunch of supportive mothers, wives, people who, you know, all had their own, in a lot of cases, their own career paths that they studied for and were already rolling out. Like Mel was a dietitian. She'd fully trained, had a couple of practices going. But the moment Harry turned up, our eldest, in 2001, she just said, no, I just want to be full-time mum and to make sure that we balance up this extraordinary lifestyle that's so different to what would be technically a more normal home-based lifestyle. So they worked hard, they worked and committed and sacrificed lots and gave us every opportunity as players to make sure we didn't miss out on engaging with you guys as kids. And I don't know, I hope it sounds like your reflection on it, and I hope my kids would reflect the same way, that they didn't miss out on anything or don't feel connected to us as fathers.
No, I mean, I have great memories. I feel so lucky to have been a part of your lives, Dad's life, but him to still feel connected to mine. Do you think it helped having Mel be there right from the get-go to ride all of the highs and lows to get to the top, and then once you're at the top, maintaining it? Do you think it stood you in good stead to have someone in your corner that had sort of seen it all?
Yeah, for sure. Just to have that understanding that, you know, if there was something that we had planned and then a tour date changed or we had to go to a training camp that was called that wasn't scheduled in originally, like to be flexible and versatile like that and the understanding of why we had to do it, and through so long a period of our lives, that was the focus. For Mel to know that and know the reasoning behind that and why, and also have the understanding and support of her, made it so much easier for me. I think if there was a partner that questioned that or challenged it or didn't want to be on that journey, that would make it frightfully difficult. So again, can't comment for how others felt, but I saw a number of us in very similar situations, and we all knew we had wonderful support around.
Talking about support, obviously all you boys love each other to bits. You spent so many hours, days, months together around the year. mates, obviously, you went through so many amazing highs, so many really lows. You've got to have some gun stories for us, though. I want to know one of like pure mateship or like just a hilarious belly laugh story that just instantly pops into your mind.
Oh, again, I keep dragging it back to your old man when I think of that. But I think the sense of mateship, a lot of it comes out, manifests out in the team song when we've won a test match.
I know where you're going with this, Gilly.
I mean, Ricky was custodian of the song for a while. He passed it on to Justin Langer. But cut a long story short, we're in South Africa and we do the team song normally in the change rooms, but we decided to take it sort of off-piste, if you like, take it off-road somewhere for a team song. So we end up on going up the cable car in Cape Town up to Table Mountain. Some were in the cable car, others were on the roof of the cable car, which OH&S wouldn't have a great time.
No way. And it's high, that cable car too. Like, I've been on that thing and it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's getting on top of that, I wonder?
Yeah. Well, one M. Hayden was up there, but not only was he on top of there, he decided to drop a nude bomb. And so he's basically stark naked with an Aussie flag draped around his neck. So think Leonardo DiCaprio at the front of the Titanic. That was his king of the world moment.
Oh, honestly.
But we had, there was, I mean, the other guys you think of that just constant humour around the group. Darren Lehman was always up for a joke, but Roy, God rest his soul, Simo. Andrew Simons was just one of the funniest blokes, naturally funny, had no idea that he was trying to be funny.
And
in fact,
dry
he wasn't
ass
trying to be funny. Dude. Yeah. That was a team that knew they had something unique by way of skill level and the level of achievement, but maintained a sense of humour throughout. And John Buchanan as coach was always very, very keen to make sure that whenever we got a bit too serious, we won a test match in Perth. It was against Zimbabwe. Well, there you go. It was when your dad got the at the time world record of 380. And I did a sponsorship deal, just side noting here, with a group to put their sticker on the back of my bat. It was the first time we were allowed to have advertising other than the bat manufacturer on the back of your bat. So I got 100 in that game off 85 balls, and I thought, how good, I'm going to be front page of the paper, I'm going to be back page, I'm holding the bat up.
Hopefully get another ring deal, another contract.
Absolutely, big time. So I was off and running, I was going to have all this mass exposure, I was going to go, and before the term viral was even around.
Yeah.
But I just did it the day that your old man got 380, so there was no mention of me in any press. But after that test, we then went to Sydney to play the second test, and John Buchanan challenged us. He said, your celebration in Perth was terrible to us as a team. This is a coach of a national team. He goes, that was rubbish. He said, you blokes have lost your mojo. You're taking it for granted. You won a test. Because I think we did a really meek and mild team song after that, and everyone just went to the hotel and I went home, and then we all flew out. Normally, you know, it's like the wildest part. We valued you got to celebrate success. You got to. So there's Buck challenging us before the next game. We won the next game in Sydney, and oh my God, the SCG didn't know what hit it in the chair.
It went off.
So we've always maintained a sense of fun and enjoyment in amongst the fierce training and intensity of it.
Oh, you would have had to. I mean, you look at a test match, days on end, being out there in the hot sun. In each other's company, surely you've got to lean in and have a crack when you finally get a win after all those days.
You've just got to win, lose or draw. You need a little bit of a blowout because, as you say, 5 days of actual competition. You're there for probably 3 days prior at least, pretty intense lead up. So it's an 8 to 9 day sort of part of your life. So it's all high intensity. And then at the end, you've got to let off steam a little bit and then dust yourself off and start preparing for the next one.
Totally. You're now in broadcasting, but when you finished up, how did you go with letting go of being a player? Obviously, when you're playing it on the big stage, you can never really reach that back in reality. I've spoken to Dad about this before, of you are on such a high or your emotions are on such a high, you'll never reach that same level of, I don't know, I guess, endorphins or whatever you want to call it. Did you find it hard coming back into normal day-to-day life post being an athlete?
I didn't feel I was missing anything. I had a really pretty soft land or a nice gentle landing outside of the game because I was fortunate to have a whole lot of sponsorship relationships where I was able to continue my involvement with them post cricket. What I did do is I was afforded the opportunity to go into commentary with the legendary Channel 9 team straight away. So I'd never thought about being a commentator. I didn't aspire to do it or in broadcasting in any sense. But I said, look, they wanted to sign me on straight away, full time. And I went, let me do a test match and see if I'm any good, if I like it or not. So I did a test in Perth, and it was, this is with Richie Beno and Tony Gregg and Bill Laurie, all Ian Chappell, all the legends that we grew up, just the voices of summer. And so I went in there and I did this test match first year out. So I'm talking about, punter and your dad and, everyone else that's still playing. And it felt a bit odd, and Richie Beno used to say, what was it? If you can't add to the pictures, don't speak. And gee, there was a lot of silence from me. I just didn't know what to say. I was rubbish. But I finished now? And said, I said, no, thanks. I said, I won't, I'm good. So I went 5 years just doing other stuff. I had a few little businessy things on and a lot of ambassadorial stuff. And then the Big Bash started on Channel 10 and they had to build a commentary team and I was asked to do it. And I went, oh, I don't know. I wasn't very good 5 years ago. And I said, who are you putting in the team? And he said, Ricky Ponting, Mark Waugh and Damien Fleming. I said, I got to have a crack with those blokes. And it was there that I realised I did have a bit of a passion for broadcasting. It did give me that spark that I think you're alluding to, that feeling of, being particularly live TV, live broadcast. And you know it now yourself, when you're in front of a camera and you've got a director in your ear going, 3, 2, 1, right, we're live. And that does, even now thinking about it, gives me a little adrenaline rush.
I'm like goosebumps.
Yeah.
It's so exciting because anything can happen.
Anything. And you can stuff up and you will, and we will continue to make mistakes. But that's just life, isn't it? There's nothing slick and perfect about life. There's always those little aberrations but nothing, as long as you've got a nice attitude and you can be prepared to laugh at yourself and learn from it. But that gives me the buzz now. I didn't finish thinking I needed to fill a void, but having discovered this broadcast world, and let's face it, we're all catching up with the same bunch of mates.
Exactly. for everyone.
Absolutely. There's Seven and Fox in Australia. Then you go to the India and the broadcast there, or the over in the MLC in America, which I was fortunate to be a part of. And I know your dad's been a part of that too, which is a great broadcast.
Did you get yourself a hat?
Oh, yeah, the hat. Yeah, yeah. that is, once you get to Texas, you've got to get one of those hats.
Oh, yeah.
But that's probably giving me that adrenaline rush now, and it's a really fun, exciting feeling. Even probably more so that the talking and hosting as opposed to calling the game, because that probably excites me a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. I heard a rumor that you, before cricket, you maybe had the opportunity to do something in baseball.
Well, no, not before cricket. I played one baseball game at school. We played against one of the schools up the road. And at the bottom of the sixth innings, we had to call the game off because it was 21-0 up. They were up and the bus was waiting to go back to school. So we just said the mercy rule, said we're out. We're going to get the bus. We didn't get to the ninth inning. But in 2003, around that period of time, Mike Young, American baseball coach, Origin, moved to Australia to basically help run Australian baseball and coach them at the Olympics back in the 80s. He stayed on, or more than the 90s actually, he stayed on, and John Buchanan got him on board as fielding coach for us. So we had amazing insight and innovation from a baseballing background to particularly help our fielding. And also just about your mindset and being an athlete. I love Youngie, and we all do. So, but he knew some of the coaches, and there was an Australian coach on the Boston Red Sox coaching staff. So this is around 2003. He sent some tapes of me, or some cricket tapes, and I think it was a highlights package of me sort of hitting, obviously had a decent innings, hitting a few sixes. And the guys there said, wow, they can't believe our fielders catch without gloves. but yeah, that the invitation was extended to me. They said, wow, that's pretty good hitting, but maybe you'd like to come and try and hit a few balls over here and let's see how he goes.
Yeah, right. So if things weren't pear-shaped in cricket, you could have been the next Boston Red Sox player.
I wouldn't say it was an eight-figure sum of money on the table to sign on, but it was a chance to probably go and explore and have a bit of fun. But I didn't go. That's when we were on our way to a 2003 World Cup. So I was right in the middle of my career and just focused on that.
Yep.
I reckon Binger Brett Lee went and threw an opening pitch at an Arizona Diamondbacks game, or maybe did some pitching comparisons with the lead pitcher at the time there. And just in the most recent MLC at Oakland, which, how good did that look? The MLC playing at the Coliseum, that was absolutely brilliant. So we had the Oakland Bees, not the Oakland A's, who have moved, they're down the road in Sacramento, but the Oakland Bees, they're the ballers. They're the next sort of rung down baseball group, and they came and learn a few tips from us about cricket and vice versa. So there's so many similarities. There's so much overlap between particularly T20 cricket and baseball. And that's the exciting proposition for cricket in the US, isn't it, really? And I think it's building.
Who would have thought cricket in the US? Hey, like, it's unbelievable to think about. And you would have been at the forefront of seeing the progression of the game, seeing it from, T20 being introduced and how big the IPL is now, but how much T20 cricket's really expanded globally into places like the US.
Yeah, and look what's coming in the Olympics in LA. So that's so exciting for the game. And I really think, we played against the US in 2004 in a Champions Trophy over in the UK. So it's certainly not new to cricket. I feel like this MLC being the third edition felt like it's really starting to bed down there and give it, the game's got a strong opportunity. The level of investment is more than just being at the superficial level of putting a tournament on. It's starting to look downwards and get the foundation level right. So really, really exciting. And there's a lot of love for the game. Obviously there's a Southeast Asian community, expat community there, but the challenge will be to get the Americans on board, the true blue Americans, but hopefully we can. We're not trying to threaten baseball, but I reckon there's room for all of it, particularly in the women's game. Yeah, the women's game in particularly there, I reckon there's a real opportunity.
Oh, we hope to see that quickly, because I know you have to go soon, but Ashes are at the back end of the year. Yeah. Big. Here in Oz, obviously we've seen India play England now in tests, and then we've just played the West Indies. What does the Aussies need to do? Obviously, there's questions around our top order, but what are your thoughts on our team and how we're going to really take on England at home?
The build-up's going to be huge, and we seem to feel it every time. I remember when we were playing, it felt like this is the biggest build-up ever. There's no way anyone could have had such anticipation, but I think it's starting to head that way. On the back of a bumper summer in Australia last summer with India out here, record viewership, record bums on seats in attendance at each venue. So I think we might challenge that again as this Ashes rolls out. Australia, they were convincing enough in the West Indies, 3-0, challenged at times. It was a bowler-dominant sort of series over there. The bowling conditions were much more favourable than the batting conditions. So it's hard to judge the top order, young Sam Constance. What do they do with him? What a roller coaster for that young man at the age of 19. But it's going to be challenging for them to pick him in the first test, I think, depending. I mean, there's still so much cricket to come in between.
Yeah. What would be your advice for him? I mean, he's such a young gun. He's only 19, as you said. He really performed massive on the big stage against India when we were, our top order was definitely dwindling. He came through and was like that shining light. What would be your advice to a youngster like him?
Yeah, whatever you did in Shield cricket, whatever you've done all the way through, just play to that style. I don't think what we saw on Boxing Day is, I suspect that's not been his style all the way through his career. Like, that's not been the foundation that he's worked from. And he himself, I think, admitted the occasion got the better of him. And, you know, if things went other ways, it mightn't have looked so so exciting and so good. But he acknowledged that, which is good. Just do what you've done to get to that level. And that West Indies series was really challenging to try and do anything. You know, the experience of Usman at the top, he only averaged 17 or something, but he did actually occupy the crease for a fair amount of time at periods. And so maybe Sam's got to just look to that and learn, but go just trust the foundation that got you to that level. But yeah, Australia, the bowling's still outstanding. They've still got another punch to throw this group, even though, you know, Stark's 100 tests, 400 test wickets now. They're aging, but they've still got a few more good bouts in them. Yeah, they are class act. Yeah, they could drop Nathan Lyon. that's the how well they're going, that they could leave him out. England, well, I think we saw in the just recently as we talk, just recently they completed that third test at Lords. They need Jofra Archer fit for the Ashes. They need to get him through. If they can get him and Mark Wood bowling thunderbolts, that is going to be hugely significant to their chances down here in Australia. That's simple as that. Their batting, it's a bit fragile at times as well. It seems like the whole baseball phenomena is sort of just settling a bit, and they're playing a bit more, still very aggressive cricket, but nothing too outrageous or reckless. But yeah, I see it as we sit here now at the moment, a long way out, sort of 5 months out, that Australia start favourites. Well and truly, it's in Australia, and I'd expect they'll get it done, but a lot can happen between now and then.
It sure can. It's exciting times. But you have something exciting coming in the works. You and Mel have been working on something together. Do you want to give us a little sneak peek of what it might be?
Yeah, something a little bit different that catches people by surprise. We're about to launch a tequila label, a tequila brand.
So
for all our, you know, viewers and listeners that are going to be listening and or watching and jumping on board as your show grows in the US, particularly on Willow, that is the market for tequila. So we're going to start in Australia, and then hopefully we can venture over into the US and go a little bit more global. But I've always loved tequila. I reckon it gets a dud rap. People think it's something that you just got to get wasted and smashed on, but you can enjoy it like most things, premium tequila in a nice balanced manner. And it's there for everyone.
Nice margarita. Oh, sipping by the sunset. I can see it already. Yep. I'll have to try some, Gilly.
That's right. I can see you, the beach setting, Gracie. Ooh, absolutely. Yeah, you'll nail it.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. I've loved having you as my first guest. It's been such an honour, so thank you.
Absolute pleasure, as I said. And I know it's going to fly, so I'm thrilled to say that I was number one.
Yes, how good. Well, that's a wrap for this episode of Game On with Grace. Another huge thank you to Adam Gilchrist for coming on board and bringing his insight, his humour and honesty about competition, character and cricket, and of course, so much more. So if you loved this episode, make sure you subscribe, you like, you share, you comment, but also tell your mum, your dog, your mates, anyone who wants to have a listen to so many legends that are coming on board, telling their hilarious debates, big stories. So stay tuned. I'm Grace Hayden, and until next time, stay competitive.